May 26, 2021. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. They did it. Oh, let's hear it again.
By Muhammad Ali Show. Sumari over the top, and that's it. Lille are champions of France. 2-1 the final score on the evening. And for the first time in 10 years, Lille Olympique Sporting Club will lift the title.
Oh, yeah. I had to have been the only person in gambling Twitter paying attention to Ligue 1 in France, but I had a 65-1 ticket in my pocket on Lille to win the league. They pull it off. I cashed the longest odds I've ever cashed in my history as a sports bettor, and gave me a bit of a boat of confidence. That was the only wager that I made in Ligue 1 before the season. I actually throughout the entire season, I didn't make any other future bets. And picking that one out as the value play, gives me a little bit of confidence. Will I be able to hit something like that again? Probably not. But I'm enjoying it while it's happening. I also cashed the hedge, took Angers at +1.5. They only lose by one, so I cashed that as well. And then I get my $300 free bet from DraftKings. If you listen to last week's episode, you know that my hedge was based on not only being able to possibly cash both, but then the DraftKings promo giving me a $300 free bet, whether it wins or loses. So I have not bet that $300 yet. I'm probably going to find a game in the USL this weekend to place that on. Probably an underdog that's way undervalued or whose odds are too long. And because that's something with hi, everybody, welcome to The Better Life. Before we get into the interview, I want to talk about getting these bonus bets, these free bets, and how to really extract value out of them. It's really easy as a bettor to want to make sure you get something out of that, right? And we see it in free bets around the casino, right? I play video poker with free bets, with free play, to give me the best chances, or, you know, to really, low house edge, game, something I feel like I'm going to get something back out of this, right? The advantage players out there are probably talking to their phone, telling me how exactly you should be playing free play in the casino. But in sports betting, you really should be trying to maximize the value in that free play, especially since you don't get the free play back, right? So this $300 free play that I have, I'm not getting that $300 back. So if I were to lay -300 just to guarantee that I get, or try, it doesn't guarantee anything, but just try to give myself the best chances of winning something, I'm only winning $100 out of that, right? That's not a lot. My goal is going to be to try to find something that's around +100 or +150 to +200 or better this weekend, and really trying to maximize the ROI on that free play. So we'll see that. I'll probably tweet that out, which game I, by the way, thanks to everybody who shot me messages and stuff. I know a lot of you don't really care about soccer. Quite a few of you shot me a message and were like, hey, good luck today. And I appreciate that. I went to MGM National Harbor recently, and, masks are still a thing. I cashed in some free play. I had like $80 in free play. Got, I think I cashed out with $80. So I got a little 1-to-1 on my free play there. Went down and played the stadium gaming craps. Like, let me just go down there. I got bored real quick. So the utility for me, the utility that the stadium gaming craps has for me is I have to have someone next to me. It's the time between rolls and everything. It's not like roll to win where there's like some sort of like table atmosphere. You're just sitting there by yourself at a terminal. I got bored real quick, but one thing that did happen that I did not anticipate really ever doing, but I finally did, is I rolled, at the stadium gaming. They have a tub there. It's about the length of maybe a third to a half of a craps table. It's about how long it is. A little bit longer than the one I remember seeing at Maryland Live. And this is at MGM National Harbor, I remember. Didn't like it. It was, I don't think I would ever volunteer to get up to go. The only reason I even did is because, like, they were having a hard time finding people who wanted to roll. It ended up being, like, the same two people out of 20 because, like, no one wanted to roll. So finally, I was like, yeah, whatever, I'll roll. And I get up there, and here's why I don't like it. I rolled a 10 point, the point of 10. I got it right back, right? Normally, that'd be super exciting at a craft table. Great. I just want... Great. No one cared, right? I'm sure people at the terminal cared. I'm sure people won, but there's no excitement. And as someone who rarely plays the pass line, not having the excitement that comes with playing the pass line was even even more of a reason to not bother. So that'll probably be the last time I volunteer to go throw the dice at a stadium gaming scenario with crap. So anyhow, that's how my weekend went. Lil got there. MGM National Harbor was it was busy as ever. I will say I went to Tap, which is their little sports bar or sports bar restaurant there. That was pretty busy, and it was cool to see people like embrace. And you know, if you had to be, you know, if you're at the bar or something, that you could take your mask off. You know, they wanted you to wear your mask while you walk around, but once you're seated, you can obviously take your mask off. And as I was sitting there watching people. People walking around, like you tell, like people are out in groups again, right? Which was nice. So it was cool to watch people dap each other up and give hugs, and you know, the world's healing. I like it. Okay, today's episode with Dalton Harp. He wrote a short, produced a short film called Charlie, which is a short film for bettors by a bettor. It's about a young lady who is into sports betting. He tweeted it out a few times. It's on his YouTube channel. If you haven't seen it, you like want to watch it before listening to him kind of talk about it. There's no spoilers or anything, but if you want that context, go ahead and pause this now. If you just look up, Charlie sports betting, movie, sports betting film on YouTube. If you're on Twitter, if you go to Dalton Harp 7, there, you know, he's tweeted it out there. I've recently tweeted out on the Better Life feed, at the Better Life on Twitter. Go watch it. It's not too long. So 30, 40 minutes, something like that. And, you know, it's a nice short film. Take a look if you want some context before the conversation. Here's my conversation with Dalton Harp talking about creating a short film for bettors, what it means to write fiction about gambling and for bettors, character creation, the whole nine yards. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. What's up, Dalton?
Dan, what's up, man?
How you doing? I'm just going to throw you into the deep end here. We're just going to get at it.
All right, let's do it.
So how you doing? It's so good to meet you in person. Whatever in person means. It's so good to see you. We've exchanged a handful of messages over Twitter.
Yeah.
I enjoyed your short film. You seem to enjoy my podcast. This has been a fun little relationship we have here.
Yeah, man. Let's keep it going.
So, I'm going to give a few minutes here for people to get onto the stream. Have you been gambling lately?
Cool. The PGA Championship was not great on my end.
No, you didn't have Lefty?
No, didn't have Lefty. Had a big swing and a miss on a lot of people to miss the cut that made the cut. Ricky Fowler and Mickelson really messed me up there.
Don, let's start this interview where we start all of these interviews, and let's talk about you as a gambler. Where it all starts. Tell us about the as far back as you can remember. What was your first exposure to gambling?
I think it was when I was forced to get a job in high school. I'm a big golfer. I play golf in college. My dad told me to get a job. Ninth grade, 10th grade, had to get a summer job. All I wanted to do was play golf. So I played with the groups that played on like Sunday afternoon, Wednesday afternoon, Friday afternoon, big gamblers. So for my summer job, I would go and buy raw boiled peanuts, boil them overnight. I would take them to the golf course the next day, sell them as my job, and then take that money and gamble with on the golf course to really make some money.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. How might, you know, how much of gambling being a gambler is having one hustle just to feed your gambling hustle, right?
For sure. Yeah. For sure. I mean, the filmmaking and the gambling have always been part of my life. I was the guy in high school with the camera. I was also the guy in high school with the cigar box of poker chips and like a wad of cash in his car just because I thought that was cool at the time.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you're getting older, then how does gambling fit into your life as you become a young adult and further into adulthood? Is it something that you end up doing often? Is it a sort of a part of your routine life? Something you kind of did you ever step away from it? How did it evolve in your life?
Yeah, so it's definitely still part of my life, the heavy part of my life. The gambling with I feel like golf gambling was just different because that was a talent that I had that I was putting on the line. And then in 2007 was my first trip to Vegas. I went out there for the CES show, for the Consumer Electronics Show. I had a studio with an investor, and we went out there and we kind of threw our business cards around just to see what would happen. And I walked into a sports book, and I was like, yeah, this is easy. I can just bet on any SEC team to win any other football game. I'll just do that. Didn't turn out so well. From 2007 to 2010, I fell in love with Vegas, went to Vegas dozens and dozens and dozens of times. I was editing a film in LA, and any trip that I would take from Atlanta to LA, I would do a little jump back to Vegas before I came back to Atlanta. And then 2010, I had lost enough money in sports betting that I was like, there's guys out there that do this for real. I've got to figure out how you can do it for real. So I took the full plunge for about 2 years of every book that I could find, every forum that I could read and post and talk to people. And then about 2012, I started betting college football, PGA, and kind of fell in love with those two sports and still do it today. I have my algorithm, my setup. I still do all of the things I used to do. I'm the father of twins and married now. So I think leading into Charlie, my dream to move to Vegas in 2015-16, I think that's where I pulled that inspiration from. And then I met my wife in 2015, and we ended up staying in Atlanta, and we have two beautiful girl twins.
Oh, very good. Congratulations.
Yeah.
So how does your, is your wife a better, is she familiar with that, with the industry at all? Or is that something you kind of had to negotiate a little bit in the relationship?
So that was one of the first conversations we've had. I think it was on our second date. I was like, I got to tell you something. And she was like, oh no, what? And I was like, you're going to see me with odds boards and screens and spreadsheets and all of that. That is what I do before the day work kicks in. That is what I'm pouring over. That's why I get up at 4 and 5 a.m. to pour over that stuff before the real day starts. I will keep up with all of this. I'll track it. And she's like, oh, so you're a gambler. I'm like, yeah, but like it's more to it than that. And then I have to explain, like, so it's gambling, but yeah, it's part of the investment. And like, you know, I'm actually attempting to bring in more than I lose instead of just throwing money around in parlay.
I like that. There's more to it, right? Like, it's gambling, but it, you know, I feel like gamblers, baby. I love gamblers. They're so defensive. Like, come on, it's more to it. That's cool. I mean, so did you ever, you know, like, so like you're having that conversation on date two, but then was there a point anytime after, like soon after that, where she, like all then she saw it and when she was like, oh, that's what he's talking about?
I think it took a while. I think it was the first football season really hit her. They're like, oh, shit, this is real. I think that the first football season we were together, I love college football. I'm a fan of college football, but I also like, I feel like I eat it up for the betting side during the week, but then on Saturday I can flip that switch and just turn into a football fan. So from like 9 a.m. until the last Pac-12 game plays and hopefully there's a Hawaii game, like that is my Saturday. She is the most awesome person. We have three televisions in our living room, one main television, and two off to the side for the additional games. She's a big Georgia Bulldog fan, so that usually takes main stage, and then I get to watch my UTEP versus whoever on the side.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. So, you know, you mentioned Charlie, which is a short film that you created, that you call, a short film for betters by a better. And so I obviously you had experience in this going. So like, when does film, you said it in high school, you were the guy with the camera, but like when does film, when does it really become a part of your life?
I've got a picture of me at 12 years old, shirtless, jean shorts, cut off jean shorts, shirtless, standing over a burning sandcastle with a G.I. Joe and a Godzilla facing off with a VHS camera on my shoulder.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it's been, I don't know, since then, before then, I fell in love with it. Any film that I could watch, I watched. I loved everything about filmmaking. I romanticized filmmaking. Went to film school. I feel like there was a big turn in the industry when the digital cameras and HD kind of came about. So the romantic side of that was kind of lost. And I think that's what led me to find something else that was romanticized in sports betting and gambling, that it was still like under the radar and still, you know, seen as different and something that people either look up to or look down upon. I went to film school, got out of film school, started a studio with an investor. We made a couple projects. I left that studio in about 2010, 2011, did my own freelance thing for about 3 or 4 years. A company here in Atlanta found me and hired me as director producer of their creative agency. And that was about the time I met my wife, about 6 months after I walked into this job. And my plan was to work here for 4 years and then bounce to Vegas. And then I met her 6 months later, and then the things changed.
And things changed.
But they've always been simultaneous. I just never thought to mix them and smash them together until Charlie came along and the world started opening up to legal betting. And I felt like it was time. And I'm still trying to be the first feature film in this world to do it right and to really kind of take this new wave of interest with it.
Yeah.
So we created the short to be able to develop it into a feature.
Yeah. Cool. Well, it's, I very much enjoyed it. I tweeted it out. I've tweeted out a couple times, including today, so making sure people get a chance to take a look at it as we talk here. I mean, as you know, Mark Duvall and I do this, you know, this monthly episode, right, looking at TV and film and stuff. And I have been slowly writing a little bit of gambling fiction myself. And I'm with you. There's just so much room here for something really good in the gambling space, right? And not Vegas, right? Like, and that's the part that I think that filmmakers are unwilling to really get away from, is a gambling story that doesn't either include shady mob type characters or Vegas, right?
Yep.
And so I agree with you. I think there's so much room here in TV and movies everywhere for content that's for gamblers, right? Not just about gambling, that's for bettors. And so I very much, when you were like, hey, I made this short film, I was like, yes, good. Someone else agrees with me. So when did you have that aha moment where you're like, oh, snap, I can take this thing I'm really good at, this industry that I'm passionate about, and create something for it?
I think it was late 2018. When like legalization really started blowing up, I had just worked with the actress that's in Charlie on one of the pieces that we do for our agency, And she was just so awesome. And I just saw that, like, she could play a character. And I wanted to write a character for her. And I sat down to write an 8 to 10 minute short film. I wrote for almost 2 days, ended up with like 157 pages. It was just a ridiculously long script because I couldn't stop writing about gambling and this story, which turned into the feature narrative version of this. It's, I don't know, like, if we want to talk about like what the film is until people have had a chance to watch it, but it is written to tell the entire story. I wanted to use it as a spec piece so that you see the entire arc of both main characters, instead of giving, 8 to 10 minutes portion of what the story could be. I wanted to tell the whole story, slam it down to 37 minutes. I think that was it. I think it was just, they just kind of snowballed from writing. And when she walked into the project, when I pitched her the idea after I kind of had it outlined, her first question was, what's sports betting? So we started there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. What's sports betting? That's like Matt Damon walking. That's like Matt Damon walking on the set of Rounders, being like, now, how do you play it now? What is this poker we're talking about here?
Yeah,
these cards. So we started there, and I gave her like my stack of books and all of the articles that I could pull. Showed her as many clips of just mannerisms and things to take note of. VSIN was a huge resource for her. She would just leave that on all day. She could walk in any casino right now and make any bet that you ask her to. She was phenomenal. She ate it up. She did that in about 3 to 6 months of being able to not just deliver the dialogue, but know what she's saying while delivering the dialogue.
I have been watching a lot. I've been watching TV and movies through such a different lens in the past few years. As someone who has gotten to work behind the camera on like nonfiction stuff, I understand. I enjoy the art, at least in creating videos and stuff. And then as I listen to like rewatch podcasts, like Office Ladies for The Office, Fake Doctors Little Friends for Scrub, stuff like that, I hear a lot of the behind. I hear them show appreciation of stuff that maybe I wouldn't have otherwise seen. And because there's so much content in the past 10 years that has just been thrusted in front of us because of streaming and everything, I start being able to see so many different types of performance, writing, and directing in so many different variations of skill. It's so quickly, I can so much more quickly not be like, this is bad, right? Like, it's not just a, like, this isn't for me, or they didn't do this one very well. It's like, this is bad. And it is so important for the character to be able to speak confidently about the subject in which they are speaking of. And I would not have been able to guess that that she did not know what sports betting was 3 to 6 months prior. Right. So I think that's well done, sir, on making sure your talent was prepared.
No, I applaud her and thank her every single day. Obviously, it was super low budget. It was all out of my pocket. So any time that we had to redo things or get pickups, like that's just money eating out of a pocket. So she treated it like her own and made it hers. I appreciated that.
So tell me. So let's talk about, and you can speak about the film however you'd like. Okay. Let's save a couple of the key moments for when people get a chance to watch it. But otherwise, speak on it how you'd like. Tell me about, how you made sure you were writing this for bettors, right? That this was I want to make sure that it's clear you wanted to deliver a movie that bettors would resonate with.
I think I just questioned myself after I wrote that long 157 pages. I questioned everything that I pulled out of that to put down to the short film with what I would want to see. I've watched every gambling movie there is. I have my favorites. I have the ones that I hate with a passion. I pulled some from there. Scorsese and P.T. Anderson are my big two influences of my filmmaking career. I've borrowed from them often. So I wanted to like just take everything that I love and just like slam it down into 37 minutes. So it's got the Scorsese running dialogue. It's got the broken fourth wall, like in a Big Short type films. I love the idea that we go halfway into the film and we take that big turn where we hit real time. So it's been her telling the story in GA the entire time until we hit that moment. Then we're living real time with her and her father on their redemption crusade. I think it's just, I question myself, like, would I want to watch this? Is this appealing to me? I think some of the feedback I was getting when I talked to the cinematographer about it, he's like, so wait, we're going to put her in a room by herself in front of monitors. And that's going to be interesting. And I was like, yeah, yeah, that's going to be interesting. He's like, are you sure that's interesting? I was like, to every gambler, yes, that is interesting. It's spreadsheets and movement, and we just have to figure out how to make it look interesting,
right,
from camera movement and positioning of her. But that's what it's all about. I think that's what these other films miss. It's like, it doesn't have to be Vegas. It doesn't have to be these big runs. It's most of the time by yourself in a room that's like, you know, this size, like that's it. And I think that's where people miss the point of the Rec Plus style gambler.
Yes. So glad to hear you use that term.
I'm pretty sure I mean, stole that from, who did I steal that from? Will Kepper?
Yes. Mr. Drew Denson.
Borrowed.
Yes.
Borrowed.
Yes. I'm curious also, something that I think is really difficult when you have a subject that's for a very specific subset of the population, like gambling. How do you did you have to challenge yourself with making it accessible to non-bettors, or were you so focused on making this as for bettors by a better, did that really come to mind?
I think once I laid the actual story arc of both characters, and that the perception of dad as this giant asshole, and then we get to flip-flop that towards the end, making it the reconnection, the redemption story, just with a gambler backdrop. Like, the storyline's there. That's why I really believe in this film as a bigger version, as a feature film, because dudes can go to the cinema and enjoy the betting side, enjoy, you know, looking at the girl, and then the girlfriends can actually have this very heart emotional storyline that's running through the entire film. And in that feature film version, you get dad's side of the story as well. We just didn't have time to include it in the short. But he also has a running monologue that is kind of playing off of her monologue. So that makes both storylines kind of run congruent.
Okay. When you go to Vegas, where do you like staying?
I used to say Sahara used to be my place. I loved it. Sahara, MGM, and then as soon as I was married, we're Ari and Bellagio now. I don't think we can go anywhere else. I think we're stuck into those. Yeah.
Cool. I'm staying at the Bellagio for the first time ever in just a few weeks for Vegas Vacation 10. So I'm very, very much looking forward to it.
Yep, you'll love it.
Yeah, it's cool. Great. What did you ever okay, you said that there's gambling movies that you like hate with a passion. Are you willing to name them? I'm really curious because and the reason why I'm not, like, if you don't want to create a stir, that's fine. But I'm curious if based off of what those movies are, if I can see where inspiration to do that stuff better comes in you and your filmmaking. You know what I'm saying? Like because whenever you see, when as a creator, when you see something done poorly, you're like, well, I'm going to do that better. Like, or I'm going to make sure that that's done the way it should be.
Yep. Absolutely. Hopefully this doesn't put any future producers that want to make this gambling film. I think that somewhere along the way, some producer out there thought that every gambling film had to end with All In.
Mm.
And look, writing this film, it is so hard not to push all the chips in at any. So that was like the big thing that I wanted to hit in that third act, in that conclusion. Like, I can't make it to where we go all in. We actually banished the words all in on set because I just did not want to hear them. We banished that and we skipped every 13th take. So those are two like things. We're making classic. A gambling film.
That's so great. That's so good.
Yeah. My name is Dalton Harp. So somebody put on the slate, Dalton Sharp was on there at some point. So we had a blast with gambling terms. Anyway, I think just like ramping up this illusion that people need to be betting millions of dollars to get a thrill. I don't know where that came from. I think that Rounders did a really good job keeping it in the range of number that was realistic to everyone. I think I tried to keep that with this out of college gambler in Charlie, that, you know, losing 10 grand is a massive setback, but it's not about the money she lost. It was about how she lost it that set her back. And I think that's something the other gambling films don't take. They want to put a number to it. And let's make it this massive number that, oh man, but like everybody that's like would be sweating that, like, couldn't do that anyway. So what's the point in giving your audience something that's unachievable?
Yeah.
I think Mark Wahlberg's The Gambler could be the worst one I've seen recently.
I don't think there's very many people who are going to disagree with that.
Yeah, that's the mainstream one. There's some really bad off-book, like Amazon stuff that you find about like poker and stuff that's just atrocious.
Tim Kennedy agrees with you.
I will say in the last, I don't know when it was, 10 years, Mississippi Grind has to be my number one gambling film currently. I think it might be Ben Mendelsohn and Ryan Reynolds' just relationship going to that. And I think that had a lot to do with how I laid out Charlie and made it that the run at the end being more of a road trip feel with kind of taking from Mississippi Grind. So I just love the feel of that. But if you watch that film multiple times, I still see stuff that Ben Mendelsohn did, just like true degenerate gambler stuff that you don't pick up on very often. I love that film so much. And then I love that it's pulled from California Split. It was kind of like a partnership with that. It was definitely based on that feel and that style. What else is good? And then most of the influence was from Casino for this, dialogue wise and camera movement wise. I wanted to make sure we get those dolly shots and those zooms taken from Casino. That still counts Casino as a gambling film.
Is there a gambling movie trope that you think does well, that you think like where you under, you're like, yep, this is overdone but almost has to be done? If I were to answer this, I don't know if this is a trope or not, but mine is the heater, right? Showing like a strong profitable run at a table at any point in the plot, right? Not just the redemption, I got my money back, and maybe at the front to start off the, you know, to start off on, or just randomly in the middle, right? But I think as a gambler, like, there's the reason why we love trip reports in this community is because we want to hear people talk about how there was a 45-minute craps roll, right? I wasn't there, yeah. But I am still loving the story, right? I tune into You Can Bet on That to hear people talk about how they were in Vegas and it was like they were down their last dollar and a guy went out on a heater and they're like, that's exciting, right?
Yeah.
And so when I see that in those scenes in movies and TV shows always satisfy me, because I'm like, there's just nothing more and it's accessible to everybody. You don't have to be a gambler to understand how fun that is.
Yeah. That's a great one. I think that Olney Mahoney did that really well, because Ed, there's times in that film where you think that Philip Seymour Hoffman will never win a bet.
Right.
Like you truly feel that, like, this guy is going to drain all of these accounts and never win a bet. So when he goes on that run, it feels good, and it makes the audience come alive, and it makes him come alive, and you get to see that little glimpse of what this is all about. But I don't think you can have a gambling film without it. Like, that's the thing. You can't not have that and still progress a character through the gambling world.
One thing I loved about that, Owning a Home is a great example, because it showed that, no, gambling isn't just this bottomless pit of losing. You will win, but it's the discipline, right? That's the difference between the Mahoneys of the world and the rest of us, is that discipline to know your stakes, to know your limits, to know when you should walk away, to understand what your edge is, when it's time to leave, stuff like that. Dan Maloney or Mahoney, well, I can't remember what the actual guy's name is, but like, the problem was he wanted to keep betting until there was nothing left, right? Like, it didn't matter. He could have hit the moon and he would have kept betting until there was nothing left, right? And I think that it's good for non-gamblers to see that even degenerates win, right? And even problem gamblers win. Mm-hmm. It's their discipline in knowing when and how to stop. That's the problem.
Yep. For sure.
Because I think that's something, I mean, man, I mean, getting into non-gamblers and how they perceive gambling and then how gambling movies portray it. I mean, some people that I know would swear that you could go to any given table, lose a $10 bet, and somehow they'll take the $500 in your pocket, right? Like, you know, they think that just like you just walk up to a table and you're just like, here's my money. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. They don't understand. And the adage, the house always wins, makes it seem like every bet is somehow a trick play by the casino to take your money, right? And anyways, I'm going on a tangent here.
Yep.
As you were coming up with these characters, this is something I've been waiting to ask you.
Yep.
As you're coming up with these characters, what is the balance between drawing inspiration from other things you've seen and making sure you're not creating a carbon copy of the character that you're drawing inspiration from?
Character wise, I would say I pulled her father a lot from my dad. I remember growing up, there was times where he was like on the phone talking about football, never thought anything about it. And then as I, you know, started talking to him about sports betting and going to Vegas, he was like, yeah, I used to have a bookie and I would call down to the hamburger shop and I'd walk in and get my paper bag. And like,
the hamburger shop.
What is happening?
That's awesome.
So like just those stories, like that's why the character of Chef is there. The character of Chef has a bigger role in the full feature. But like, that's why those characters in there, just pulling from stories from my father and stories that I think Charlie is the closest to me and what I like, my path. But yeah, I guess that.
Okay. I asked because, you know, you always find yourself like recommending a show to someone and you're like, oh, it's like this show, or like they have like a character like this in it. And I always wonder, like, as you're, as creators, as you're drawing inspiration, like, it's important to give people a frame of reference, right? And making, but also you don't want to just have created a different version of this other person or thing, right? Okay. I think inspiration from personal life is great, because man, you can really draw from a lot of anecdotes and experiences there. Yeah. What did, I mean, I assume your dad's seen it. What was his response?
Oh,
to
yeah.
It?
Oh, he loves it. He, yeah. Of course, like, he's a gambler. He's in Biloxi right now as we're doing this.
That's great.
He loves it. He's like been sending it to all of his friends that like have no idea what this is, and like, your son made this? Does he gamble? And like, whole different world.
Does he gamble?
But yeah, he loves it. He loves talking about it. He still thinks he says it's the best thing that I've made my entire career. He keeps saying that I wish you would have come to me for more funding. I was like, dude, I did. I came to you and asked you, and you like passed. But yeah, I mean, I think taking from Mississippi Grind was my biggest pull, but I definitely wanted these characters to be themselves. And the actor that played Chuck, we had worked together on a film about 10 years ago, and it was like riding a bicycle. We just like jumped back into the director actor flow, and we were going to develop Chuck to not fit the Hollywood degenerate, but we wanted to make it degenerate that was still personable, and you didn't immediately hate him, even though you were told to hate him by the main character. You could see that there was love there at some point, and that it would come back later. We really worked on that hard, because we didn't want to recreate Ben Middleton, Mississippi Grind, but we definitely wanted to play off of what he did well there.
Yeah. Have you, what's the right question here? I'm asking this out of curiosity. I am not implying anything. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that's clear before I ask this question. is there like what inspiration have you gotten for either the, because you said you have this feature film sort of played out, you've created the short film to sort of represent that idea. Mm-hmm. But now that you've created the short film, has seeing that all the way through helped inform or inspire changes that you would make to the feature film, or even how would you tell this story again in a different iteration?
For sure. Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that the feature film has that the short film doesn't, there's a sports book in it. That was the biggest thing. We called and Facebook messaged and emailed every single sports book east of the Mississippi. We would just Facebook blow up people trying to get to their marketing directors. The producers and I were just bombarding people. It came down to a couple of casinos like, yeah, you can come here for a day and then shoot, but we need to see your insurance. I'm like, we can't cover what we need to cover to go film in a casino. Yeah. We had a crew of at max at times 10. Most of the time we were between 5 and 7 with the two actors. Like, we were just shoestring across the board. Everybody was donating time. Everybody donated equipment. Like, it was a full, you know, give to my vision, which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's tons of things in the feature. The sports book was the biggest thing. So the sports book changed to the Greyhound track in their parimutuel room, because that's where my father and I go to the Greyhound races in Jacksonville. We every time I go visit him in Florida, we go to the races there. We spend all Saturday betting Greyhounds and ponies. So that was a call that I made when I realized that there's no chance that we get a sports book. So called their general manager up, begged, sent letters, sent a EPK to him. He called me back about 2 weeks later and said, come on down. You have 3 days, full run of the place, whatever you need. And that was a free location where we could still make the story and tell the story that we wanted to tell. So rewrote a lot of the sportsbook stuff to fit Greyhound track and Greyhound racing. So the horse bet that's made at the Greyhound track, would have been at a sports book or like a TV somewhere, but it happened at the Greyhound track. So we just incorporated the feel and the vibe and the colors. And that place is like straight out of the 80s. I just love it so much. Like nothing's been touched. There's still tube televisions and neon signs. So we just our direction kind of fell into our laps on a lot of that. Yeah. So I think there's still Greyhound racing that I'm going to work into the feature. Unfortunately, not in Florida because they've outlawed it at this point. But I definitely wanted to be a part of it since it was a part of my father and I's like relationship and our gambling experience.
We're talking track racing in general, mm-hmm. horse, Greyhound. Yep. How do you feel like knowing that this is such a big part of your life's story? Like, how does it feel watching these industries die?
So these sticky notes right here on my wall in the background, that is a feature-length documentary on the end of Greyhound racing in Florida.
Oh, wow.
The same location they gave that, I went back to them 6 months later and pitched an idea to them that we want to be there. We want to document the close of Greyhound racing through your employees' eyes. So we focused on the human story of the end of an industry with no way to ever move over to something else. So we had like, we talked to trainers that like they've been doing this for 50 years. They know nothing else. And now they're forced out of an entire industry to go find a job wherever they can get one. That's coming. I'm still in the editing process on that. I feel very overwhelmed in the feature lengthiness of it. But that is the next project that's coming out of my world.
Cool. Yeah. How do you... how do you get people, bring us into the creator's hot seat of, you said a lot of people donated time and equipment. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you sell people on a project to get that from them, right? Like, what sort of conversations do you have with these people to get them to donate that time to create something that you're so passionate about?
So I've been.
Do you wait till you get them drunk? Don't you remember agreeing to give me 100 hours for free?
Get them drunk, get them to sign something, and then change it. Yeah. I've been working in the Atlanta area for 10 plus years. I have a lot of contacts. I know a lot of people. I'm working in the agency world. We hire a lot of crew, a lot of talent to full gigs for, giant trainings and whatever we need to do. So you meet a lot of people through that. They know that more work is coming through that, paid work is coming through that. So when there are passion projects, we all kind of pitch in where we can. My cinematographer and I have been working together for 15 plus years. Motion graphics and animation portion of Charlie, that was my college roommate. We've been working together for 15 plus years. So it's just people that know me know what I'm passionate about. I will say it was really nice to make phone calls and tell people that I'm a sports bettor and I'm making a sports betting movie instead of like trying to dodge that, which you usually try to dodge when people ask. So yeah, it was nice calling tracks up and sports books up and actually admitting you are a gambler.
So, are you a table games player at all too? Do you do you hit the casino tables or do you focus mostly on sports and track?
I'll play roulette. Okay. I tried blackjack for a while. I don't have the focus that it's going to take to do that. With everything else going on, roulette's fun. My dad loves roulette, so we'll go and play roulette. Of course, he has a system, and he has a system. He has his numbers. 3 years ago, I went to visit him and walked into the living room where there was a miniature setup of a roulette table and wheel that he was practicing his numbers on. So that now lives in his living room.
That's awesome.
In Florida. Yeah. So
roulette's, what are your numbers?
Definitely there. 23-14-32.
Okay.
Straight down the middle.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. Nice. Nice. 21 is the only number that I have been loyal to in all of playing roulette, but I have also adopted 17 recently. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So 21 and 17 are usually my two numbers when I play. Roulette is such a... I think roulette's a fun game. It's unfortunate that the money grabbers in the casino world have ruined such a fun game. I can't bring myself to play the double zero. I definitely am never going to play triple zero. Yeah. You know, just give me, come on. It's amazing to me that a casino that has, you know, that has Bach and all that has a bunch of these games that where there's not a big house edge in a lot of these games. They're determined to not let roulette be a low house edge game. And it's the one game that like there's absolutely nothing the player can do to like, you know, like you can't even pretend to control the dice, you know, like you literally put your chip out there and they throw like it drives me nuts. We just can't have a fun, friendly single zero roulette game that everybody can enjoy. But I digress. You said you're working on this on Greyhound Racing. I know you're looking for to hopefully bring Charlie to a bigger stage. With that, you know, I know creators like to don't like to divulge too much of what they got going on behind the scenes, but like, what other, is there anything else that you're, you know, thinking of that you've been, now that you've seen Charlie work, have you been like, oh, okay, I can do something like this? And have there been other stories that you started to put on paper?
For sure. Just with the character of Charlie and the massive amount of positive reaction we got for Charlie, makes me want to, yes, that character can live in a feature film, but that character can also be a part of another seven character show, and we can build this whole world out if we wanted to. I mean, funding is definitely like on my American Express card right now, but once we have some kind of funding, Charlie can be bigger. Charlie can live. We can develop these characters where it can, I mean, I think Luck, did you ever watch that show with Dustin Hoffman?
Yes.
Like, I feel like that was such a good try.
Such a good try.
But now that could happen. I feel like now you take that same setup-ish with sports betting, and then you build that into a world. I think there's tons of ways to go. I really want to see this as a feature film. I really want to get this off the ground. I think I have some really cool ideas behind it to make it closer to Big Short style, where you introduce a lot of different elements visually to it. I got some things cooking that I would love to make, but I think that, you know, selling one and getting funding for the others is definitely what the wife would prefer at this point.
Right. What, you know, for people who don't understand the industry side of this, have you considered crowdfunding? And why, for people who don't understand the industry, why wouldn't you try that?
So I think the last month I've been considering it. I never expected the positive reaction, as positive a reaction that we would have for Charlie than it's what we got. But my target audience are the only audience that's seen it. Like that's it. Like I focused it for gamblers. I sent it through the Twitter sphere of all the pro bettors and Rec Plus bettors that I know. And everyone seems to really appreciate it and latch onto it. I think we may have gotten two thumbs down and one negative comment. I've also posted it in like the gambling forums.
Better than a lot of those podcasters.
I posted in the gambling forums where I expected it to just be ripped apart. And it was the exact opposite reaction. People loved it. There were some, you know, dumb comments, but sure.
It's the internet.
It's going to happen. But like, I didn't expect this. So I feel like I feel like crowdfunding could work. But crowdfunding only means I can go so far with it. We could use the same actors. We could afford to pay for secondary characters. Like, that's usually where short films fall off. It's like you have your two main casts, but then the day players and those minor roles become whatever you can find. Yeah. Like the party scene, I just like it kills me. I just want to die every time I see that scene. Because we showed up, no extra showed up. We weren't paying anybody. We had to make it work with like putting crew members in clothes, staging it around, doing what we could. I felt the scene was important. I almost cut it out of there, but I had to have it to like get her motivated to doing something.
Well, if you ever need an extra, you let me know. I will show up to sit in the background. You have at least one body the next time you need extras.
Perfect. We'll give you food and some alcohol.
Perfect.
But yeah, there's things like that that, like, you know, funding is going to change that entire world. So crowdfunding, yeah, but that means that I'm doing what I just did, but with more money and still have, you know, not going to have Shailene Woodley playing Charlie. Like, it's still going to be, you know, whoever I can find and the best that I can find. And Sarah did a great job with that. And I think that she could carry the film if it was bigger. But to me, that's an entire workload that if I had studio backing or real funding, you know, whole different ballgame where I would actually be getting paid. So even if I crowdsource, I probably wouldn't pay myself because I want the film to take all the money it can to carry itself.
I mean, you just dropped a name, but I mean, like, if a studio were like, yeah, we'll pick this up, who do you think should play Charlie? We can make a couple phone calls to your wildest imaginations. Like,
I think for some reason have been leaning there, and I don't know why. I really think that she could play that age range. I think she could play it well. I'm nervous that Aaron Rodgers would be a part of it, but hey, we can get around that maybe.
Okay.
Or an up and comer that has some credits. I think Queen's Gambit did that really well with her. Like where have I seen her? Oh yeah. Oh, okay. And now she's huge. I think that type of actress would be perfect for this role, as long as the character of Chuck was somebody more established or older, you know, that's been around, that people can attach to, that has a name.
Yeah. Cool. Well, now that we're hitting the summer, which is as a sports bettor, not all that exciting, right? Once NBA playoffs are gone, it's like, oh, okay, we get to do baseball until things, you know. But what, I mean, you listed college football, golf. What else gets you waking up in the morning to check lines?
Golf gets me through the summer. I feel like, I can't wait for the all-star break of baseball so that now it's football season. To me, that's like that mark of like, now we can look at win totals. Now we can look at futures. Phil Steele is out and in my hands, and I can dive through the magazine. That to me is when I start printing schedules out, start looking at spots. That's Christmas. Like, you know, leading up until Labor Day weekend is where I focus on the preseason football stuff. I like NFL. I've checked out of trying to beat NFL. I think it's impossible. I know that guys do it. I commend them. Go. Great job.
Player props, man. I'm telling you. Player props. Yeah.
Player props. There's spots in the NFL that I'll play, but you know, Sunday's more for seeing what happened on Saturday and getting all of my data into my spreadsheets from a Saturday.
Dalton, this has been an absolute pleasure. I knew from when you sent me Charlie that I wanted to get you on here and talk. And I'm glad we were able to make it happen. I really hope that I wish the best for you in what you try to do with Charlie, whether that means getting an investor or just, you know, crowdfunding and just doing it the best you can your way. I wish you the best, and I hope that if there's ever an opportunity for me to be in the background of something that involves betting, that you will let me sit back there and eat your food and drink your liquor.
For sure. Absolutely. Anytime.
Tim Kennedy says he will be watching Charlie tonight. Where can people find Charlie? I've tweeted it. I've shared it. You've tweeted it. But where can people find it?
It's on my Twitter. If you go to @DonHarp7, if you just search into YouTube, Charlie Sports Betting Short Film, it'll pop up. I hope that you have me back once we get this off the ground, and it is a feature film, and we're all showing up to the premiere.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll absolutely get you back on here when that happens. I think Tim Kennedy says he found it on YouTube. Very good. Eager to see what everybody thinks. Dalton, thank you so much for your time. Sure. Everybody, thank you for listening.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dalton, for joining me. That was a lot of fun. I knew right away when he sent me that short film and I watched it that I wanted to have him on and talk about it. Finally made it happen here. It was good to chat with him. This stream is still, if you want to watch this conversation for any reason, it's still available on the YouTube page. To search the Better Life podcast on YouTube, you'll find our page there. You'll see the logo. Appreciate everybody who has watched the videos on there, who subscribed. I am close to releasing some videos that aren't just these streams soon. I have more ways that I plan on using that YouTube page other than just where streams will be saved. That's sort of what I'm doing with it now. But I have some videos that I'm going to start producing and posting on there. So that's coming soon. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can support the show with a monthly pledge. Thank you, everybody, who supports me there. Patrons at any level, at any pledge level, gets the a daily short, a Patreon short episode, Monday through Friday. Last week was about craps. This week has been about blackjack. I think next week, maybe getting into, casino trips, ways that I prepare. But these are fun little shorts that, maybe 3 to 6 minutes long, taking some aspect of a game or concept or something revolving on gambling, and touching on it quickly, just a nice little gambling tidbit for your day, something to think about the next time you're at the casino, maybe, or just another thing to think about in gambling. Here is an example of what came out this week. This is my thoughts on why it's okay to not go to your wallet when you're on your last bet at a blackjack table and you get a double down or split opportunity. May 25th, seventh one of these. How about that? How about this for a little streak? Number seven, lucky number seven. I can say the number seven as much as I want since we're talking about blackjack and not craps, right? Today I'm going to talk about how it's okay. I'm going to give you permission here to not go to your wallet to pay for your extra split or double down. Most gamblers are going to shake their head at this. I will not apply this perfectly in my life either. But we've all been there. We've all seen it. We've all experienced it. You're on your last bet, and then you get a split, and then you get a double down, and you find yourself going to your wallet to fund those extra bets that you need for the double down, for the split. I'm telling you right now, it is okay to not do that. Now, you're almost guaranteed to get scrutiny, at least from the other players, possibly even for the dealer, depending on what kind of table you're at. But especially for someone like me who might find themselves at a $25 table, if I'm on my last $25 chip, and look, before all of you start pinging me like, but it's a positive EV play, or it's in your best interest to double down, you're losing out on value, I understand that. But what I'm saying is, if you're in that situation where that is seriously your last bet, and if it hadn't been a double down or split situation, this would have been I'm done for the day if that loses. Why sink more cost into this shoe, right? Why sink more into this experience? You're going to catch flack from it. It is what it is. If you're with friends, hopefully they'll understand. If you're with friends, a friend will likely pony up the money for you. That's where the caveat on this comes. If you have a friend there, I have been in situations where I don't want to pull the money out of my pocket, but my friend will double down and they'll merely get the money. I'll give them what wins off the double down if they front it. So it's almost their bet almost. So I have done that before, but I'm giving you permission. It is okay to not go to your wallet to fund your splits or your double downs when you're on your last hand for a round of blackjack. Save your cash, walk away. You'll be, if it wins, okay, you didn't double down, but you won and you have some more money to play with. If it loses, you'll be glad you didn't just pony up another, you know, 3-4 bets for that split two double down scenario. All right, coming back tomorrow with how pitch games kind of come with a cost these days. I'm sure the purists of the world who refuse to leave any value on a table would disagree with that, but that is how I feel about that situation. I'm not saying that I am 100% going to be doing that. I will likely be going to my wallet, but I'm just saying it's okay if you don't want to. That's okay. The last thing I want to talk about here, just want to put this in the ether for people to know. I am going to develop this a little bit more and talk about it more extensively in the coming weeks. But Friday, July 2nd, I am hoping on having a multi-hour live stream that will benefit a charity. That day is my birthday. I was thinking about what do I want to do for that day. I'm not normally someone who really cares about his birthday, but I thought, do I want to do something? And if that's the case, what do I want to do? So I decided, you know what, I'm going to take the opportunity to, maybe do a little brand building / charity funding event. So it'll be something along the lines of maybe somewhere between 2 and 4 hours of live streaming, multiple guests on throughout the duration of the live stream, and I'll do something like for every new subscriber, follower, for every person who watches, whatever the numbers are on the live stream at the end, I will donate a certain amount to a charity at the end of that, or whatever those numbers end up being. I'll figure that out soon. But I really want to lean into the better life here for as we get into life kind of getting back to normal. I want to build the brand as I can, but I also want the better life to be a place where we support the community and do better for everybody. So I'm going to merge those two things on the day in which I celebrate my entrance into this world, Friday, July 2nd. Circle it on your calendar. It'll probably be that evening. I'll wait till everybody, at least I'll wait for the East Coast to get off work before we fire it up. And we'll see who I can't get into, who I can't get to join me for even 15, 20 minutes at a time on that stream. Okay. You've listened to me enough. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. This was a Wednesday drop. I think next week, if I get my ducks in a row, we'll have a Tuesday drop. And then the better life will start being a earlier in the week drop. So that is something that is finally getting around to doing an earlier in the week drop versus towards the end of the week. So adjust your routines accordingly. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. On behalf of Dalton Harp, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.